Book them back. And now we have that in the top of the second hour. That's interesting. It's kind of strange because that's always traditionally been in the, you know, the first hour bump. But we swapped that out for hating Breitbart, because I think what he was telling us back at the 2012 CPAC, well, maybe it was too soon. Maybe people didn't understand. Even though I was doing some research on, you know, the Frankfurt School stuff, if you go to Google's Ngram and you look at the meteoric rise of talking points like critical theory and its illegitimate child critical race theory, there's been an explosion in those talking points. Unless we're doing some kind of analysis of these things to make sure it doesn't happen, just to be familiar with it and aware of it. You know, if we're adopting it, nothing good will come of that. And that's what's been happening over the last several decades, generations even. So to finish this thought, uniting people around a common cause, the Club of Rome writes The Limits to Growth, Malthusian, eugenicist, we got to get rid of some people. We got to limit growth. Same time that happened, we got things like Kissinger's NSSM 200. And that wasn't long after the Jaffe memo and things like that. So that was kind of a thing. And then, you know, the first global revolution by the Club of Rome, Alexander King, Bertrand Schneider, sort of synthesized this idea. And they wrote, in searching for a new enemy to unite us, we came up with the idea that pollution, the threat of global warming, water shortages, famine, and the like, you know, if you own all of the riparian rights around the world and land in critical places where you can shut water off to people, and you have hoarded all of the heirloom seeds, why do they have to be called heirloom? Why do we have to distinguish between food and not food, et cetera, et cetera? Then can't you engineer famines? You know, if you've hoarded the heirloom seeds, you're hoarding farmland, you're encouraging farmers not to farm, you're giving them GMO Terminator seeds, and you've locked the real seeds up in the Svalbard seed vault, can't you engineer a famine? Oh, we would never do that. How could you say that? So they came up with the threat, they came up with the idea that pollution, the threat of global warming, water shortages, famine, and the like would fit the bill to, you know, as a way to a new enemy to unite people. Pollution, the threat of global warming, water shortages, and famine fits the bill. And then they wrote, the real enemy then is humanity itself. The fundamental need is to reduce carbon dioxide emission. That's what they wrote back in the early 90s. The plan is basically to kill off all of these, you know, useless eaters by telling people you're the enemy. So the message then is, man is the enemy of the planet and himself, and we must unite him against himself to stop his breathing. Malthusian eugenicists of the world, unite. And I think people are starting to get a glimpse of this, but maybe they don't actually understand how it works. I think Tucker Carlson said something about this a night or two ago, to the extent that, you know, if, you know, Fauci originally said you're crazy for wearing a mask, now he's saying, you know, it's just common sense if you wear 10. It's just common sense. If one is good, 10 is better. And so why don't we just, you know, put a bag over everyone's head and zip tie the bag, because that would prevent all spread. Right. But that gets back to the first global revolution and exactly what the Club of Rome wrote about this. So as we, you know, and the other point to what Rhonda was saying is, if everyone started changing their habits, you know, we can look around and we can observe and we should be aware of what's going on. But if it predominates our attention and we, you know, in so doing are prevented from effectively living our own lives, then it, in a way, has its desired effect. So we should be aware, we should be wise and discerning, but we should be living our own lives, making our own choices. Sometimes, you know, there are difficult choices, but they're not that difficult, really, in the sense that most people have made it. You know, I might have to change my grocery shopping. Well, it wasn't that long ago that grocery shopping wasn't a thing. And by the way, you know, there are examples in the Bible. It's funny how we've been conditioned to believe that if you couldn't go to the grocery store for a week, how would we live? When, for example, you know, there's the story, you know, the dreams, for example, seven fat cows and seven lean cows, you know, seven good years, seven bad years. Can you imagine if people couldn't go to the grocery store for 7 years? And yet before refrigerators, that actually happened. What would we do? So I guess the bottom line is, you know, people power, you know, not in the Marxist sense, but, you know, we really do have a lot more power than we realize. Bad guys know it, which is why they spend so much time and effort propagandizing people to death. And ultimately, I think it comes down to the passage that I've read before from Hebrews chapter 5, that, you know, the author of Hebrews is talking about the Melchizedek archetype, and writer of Hebrews says, concerning him we have much to say, and it's hard to explain since you have become dull of hearing. For though by this time you ought to be teachers, you have need again for someone to teach you the elementary principles of the oracles of God, and you have come to need milk and not solid food. Can you imagine? Thousands of years ago, people survived for years without refrigerators and grocery stores in lean years. And today, we, you know, could people make it for a month? So the writer continues, for everyone who partakes only of milk is not accustomed to the word of righteousness, for he is an infant. But solid food is for the mature, who because of practice have their senses trained to discern good and evil. And I'll just leave it there, and we'll go back to the phones. John in Tennessee, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Good morning, Chris. You know, it's kind of strange because for the last 3 or 4 days, James chapter 5 is coming to mind. I would love for the likes of Bill Gates and Biden and Kamala Harris and all these wealthy people to... And their ears, their brain would melt. If they had to listen to James chapter 5, they ever took it to heart, they'd melt with fear. You know, so James chapter 5 comes to mind. Woe unto you, ye rich men. You've heaped up treasures unto yourselves for the last days.
In the NASB, on and on and on. Come now, ye rich, weep and howl for your miseries which are coming upon you. Your riches have rotted and your garments have become moth-eaten. Your gold and your silver have rusted, and their rust will be a witness against you and will consume your flesh like fire. It is in the last days that you have stored up your treasure. Anyway, yeah.
And it goes on. They've kept it wrongfully from their laborers. And we're living in it, folks. But that's what has been in my mind the last 3 or 4 days. On top of that, when Rhonda said, you know, talked about the guy walking into the store with the elastic bands on his ears and the face mask cut out, it's like what I seen. I was in Walmart with my grandson, and there was a guy in there dressed as a death doctor, head to toe, the cane, the bird's beak mask, the top hat, the leather coat, and people didn't understand what he was doing. He was making fun of everyone in the store that had a mask on, you know, like he's the plague doctor.
Yeah,
it was a statement, and nobody knew it because no one knows what it's about. Then you go into a store. Rhonda said, you know, the guy said, "You just touched my hand." Well, this morning I went into a market, and they're standing behind plexiglass, and I've yet to wear a mask. I'm required to at work, but I don't. They don't say anything, and I just don't do it. But I made a purchase and got change back, you know, and I'm smiling at her. And she's going, "What's the problem?" I'm going, nothing. You know, you're wearing a mask, you're behind a plexiglass shield, and you're handling literally filthy lucre and putting it in my hand, you know. Yeah. But they don't get it.
Yeah. No.
So
it's astonishing.
We're in this time, Chris, where the the exchange of good for evil and evil for good, better for sweet, sweet for bitter, has happened. And I'm beginning to wonder if we are not, you know, if there was a warning in the book of Revelation, a woe unto anyone that would change the words in this book, I think specifically talking about Revelation, that we're not in, we're literally in the middle of it, and we don't realize it, or most people don't realize it, because this so-called vaccine that's actually changing your genetics, I think it's Daniel chapter 4, the iron mingled with clay, and the two shall not cleave.
Daniel 2:43, I think, is what it is.
Well, I knew it was there was a 4 in there somewhere, but
yeah,
in any event, are we in the time when you take that vaccine, if you're not becoming man and machine, and the two are not going to cleave, and you're going to get a great sore, boils, and it's going to kill you, which, oddly enough, there's been reports of people that had volunteered for this, quote, vaccine, that have lost their ability to sense God in their lives. You know, we're told that it's possible that if you don't take the so-called vaccine, you're not going to be able to return to work, socially isolated, unable to participate in the economy. That's everything that the Bible talks about for receiving the mark. Yet the church is oblivious to it. Well, it's not the mark because it's not time yet. Well, if you can't say no when it's not time, how are you going to say no when it is time?
Exactly.
So, yeah. I mean, we're in it. And, you know, if it's dire, but yet at the same time, when I see someone wearing a mask and I see someone living in fear, you can't even have a private conversation because you can't hear them. And if you were wearing a mask, they can't hear you.
Yeah, yep.
And, you know, what I love to do when they're talking to me in a mask, I say, I'm sorry, you're going to have to repeat yourself. I can't understand you with that mask on.
Yeah.
And they'll pull the mask down and talk to you.
Yep. And they'll grab it from the middle like you're not supposed to do. And everyone does it, from Anthony Fauci to Chuck Schumer to Nancy Pelosi to the person at the grocery store.
You know, and so, you know, what good is, if you violate the protocol, what good is it? Just take the thing off, live or die. You know, seriously, if it's that bad, aren't there worse things than death, Chris? Like living in constant fear that you're going to die?
Yeah.
is that worse?
There is a place where there is no risk. It's called prison. There is a place where you're perfectly safe and secure. It's called prison. There's a place where lockdowns are normal. It's called prison. And
get in your cell, lock your door. And the sad part, Chris, I was part of a prison ministry here in Tennessee, Turner Center. It's where they take the death row inmates. And I talked to one guy that had been there since he was 18. Now, he was a Christian. He's in his 40s, covered in satanic tattoos. And he said one day, just think, he called me preacher. He said, one day, all this is going to be gone. I'm going to get my new body. And I talked to the other inmates, and I said, you know what? We're all guilty. It's just some of us we've been convicted by a court, by a judge. Others of us have been convicted by God. You're in prison locked up. They close it and they lock the door on you every night you're in your cell locked up. How different, Chris, is that to the average American that goes into a $400,000 house and locks the door at night and is afraid to come out in the dark, doesn't want anyone to come in? They lock themselves in a padded prison. It's a beautiful prison. They live a life in a prison. Don't do this. Don't do that. I've got to go.
Brazilianization.
Let me leave you with one thing.
Sure.
There was a song in the 60s, I think, maybe the 70s. It's called Stuck in the Middle. Well, Chris, there's clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. Man, oh, man. I mean, you talk about a dystopia. We are there. And I would just, my desire, my heart's desire is for the Church of God, Church of Jesus Christ, those that believe and trust in Jesus Christ would live in absolute freedom with absolutely no fear, because there are things that are worse than death.
Yeah.
And part of it is having no freedom and fear. And when you're in Christ, Paul said, death, where's thy sting? Grave, where's your victory? And we're in a prison suit right now. I'm waiting to be set free. All right. Thank you, Chris.
Bet. Thank you, John. Much appreciated. So, a couple of things. What John was saying, you know, and I agree. James chapter 5, you know, verse 4, behold, the pay of the laborers who mowed your fields and which have been withheld by you cries out against you, and the outcry of those who did the harvesting has reached the ears of the Lord of Sabbath. You have lived luxuriously on the earth and led a life of wanton pleasure. You have fattened your hearts in a day of slaughter. And you've condemned and put to death the righteous man. He does not resist you. Therefore, be patient, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. The farmer waits for the precious produce of the soil, being patient about it until it gets the early and late rains. You too be patient. Strengthen your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is near. Do not complain, brethren, against one another, so that you yourselves may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing right at the door. Anyway, so that's James 5, verses 4 through 8. But, you know, Rhonda sounds like she's of good countenance. I hope that's the case. I hope that we can all emulate that if that is the case. And it reminds me of, you know, I've mentioned Walden from time to time. Be sure that you give the poor the aid they most need, though it be your example, which leaves them far behind. And, you know, then he tells the story of the Irish laborer cutting ice on the pond, and he says there are 1,000 hacking at the branches of evil to one who is striking at the root. And it may be that he who bestows the largest amount of time and money on the needy is doing the most by his mode of life to produce that misery which he strives in vain to relieve. And as I always say, I would add the word ostensibly, which he ostensibly strives in vain to relieve. He's not really trying to relieve it, is he? His philanthropy has an entirely different motivation. But before that passage, Walden writes about the missionaries and, you know, what's the scene? It was the outlaw Josie Wales, wasn't it? You know, when the missionaries came, they had the Bibles and we had the land. Now we have the Bibles and they have the land. Anyway, Thoreau writes in Walden, the savages, you know, the law to do as you would do, the law to do as you would be done by, fell with less persuasiveness on the ears of those who, for their part, did not care how they were done by, who loved their enemies after a new fashion, and came very near freely forgiving them all they did. It kind of reminds me of how Rhonda sounds. So the idea of Brazilianization, talked about that before, and how that disappeared from the Wikipedia entry for Michael Lind's book, The Next American Nation, The New Nationalism. Anyway, just one of those things, the new nationalism and the fourth American Revolution. What? Also reminded of that. Anyway, we'll go back to the phones when we come back. Stick around, more right after this break.
Oh. Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you. And your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Welcome back. Speaking of Brazilianization, just to tell a little story real quick. The next American nation, the new nationalism and the fourth American revolution, by Michael Lind, published back in 1995. I've talked about the concept of Brazilianization several times. I used to draw from the Wikipedia entry for his book, The Next American Nation. Maybe, I don't know what happened, but, you know, I've talked about things that get moved and changed from time to time. For example, the Operation Cyclone Wikipedia entry, the Salafi Movement Wikipedia entry. Those things still exist, though, and you can go back in the old page versions and find the things that I've talked about there. But then there are things like this. So there used to be a Wikipedia entry for Michael Lind's book, The Next American Nation, and there was an entry there that talked about Brazilianization and how it works. You know, these ultra-rich people retreating behind their Brazilianized enclaves And that would become the disparity, the widening disparity here in America. Michael Lynn wrote very articulately about that. And now, as I've mentioned recently, the entire Wikipedia entry for his book has vanished. So that's kind of interesting. Just to pique your curiosity, if you're interested, table of contents from The Next American Nation, The New Nationalism, and The Fourth American Revolution. Again, this was published in 95. Tell me if any of this sounds familiar. First Republic Anglo-America, Second Republic Euro-America, The Third Republic, The Making of Multicultural America. Sounds vaguely familiar. Chapter 4, The White Overclass and the Racial Spoils System. Sounds vaguely familiar. Chapter 5, The Revolution of the Rich. Sounds vaguely familiar. Chapter 6, Alternative Americas, Democratic Universalism, Cultural Pluralism, or Cultural Marxism, and the New Nativism. We've heard a lot about nativism lately. Chapter 7, Liberal Nationalism, the Trans-American Melting Pot. Chapter 8, National Democracy and the Fourth Republic of the United States. And then finally, Chapter 9, The National Story. I'll leave it there. And let's go back to the phones. John in New York, thanks for calling and for waiting. Welcome.
Hi, Chris. It's an honor. I consider you like Radio Free New York. I missed the name of the book with the chapters that you were mentioning. What was the name of book?
Michael Lynn's book, published in 95, it's titled The Next American Nation, The New Nationalism and the Fourth American Revolution.
Okay. I appreciate that.
Ben.
Never let a good crisis go to waste, okay? I think it's been going on through time. And I was reading scripture last night. I was reading about Joseph, and my perception of Joseph as an operator for the Pharaoh. He was able to take the wealth, the land, and people sold themselves into slavery for the food. And that's about Genesis 45 to 47 or so. And it kind of struck me as a perpetual scam. And I began to think of Joseph as the Henry Kissinger of his day, as an advisor to Pharaoh. And I just wanted to mention that, and you did mention the seven-year lean year, fat cows, lean cows, whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that this is, you know, we all experience life, our own individual lives, and scripture comes true in our lives. And to think of it as a revelation that would cancel creation, I don't know if that's possible. One thing, you know, you're talking about revolution, et cetera. I appreciate your demeanor and your peace. And it was funny to hear after the election that some of the your mood changes are subtle, and you have to be a regular listener to catch them. But have you ever addressed how to combat or rebel against violence upon the community?
Let's come back to that on the other side of the break. If you can stick around, let's talk about that when we come back.
Sure enough. Thank you.
All right, stick around, folks. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website, by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Amazon customer: "It's amazing. I just ordered my second bottle. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after I exercise. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off of BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel." Amazon customer: "Extendivite works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it." Amazon customer: "Excellent herbal formula. I've been using it to keep my cardiovascular system fine-tuned. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen planned to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful, loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile OxySilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
Bottom of the second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast is Friday, January 29th, 2021. We're on the phones, John in New York. Would you mind restating the question, please?
Well, I understand the value of peaceful resistance. I'm an old hippie, you know. I lived in India, you know, the whole thing. And, you know, as Gandhi was portrayed, you know, hit me over the head with the stick until I become unconscious, you know. At what point does a spiritual person not walk into a dangerous situation? I mean, we're looking at reformatting genetic codes, etc. All this is becoming insane. And we have people that are opportunists, like George Soros, lifting the wealth of the people victimized by the Nazis. And his logical expression is, if I didn't do it, somebody else would have.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm going to push in a direction, you know, hopefully, and I know you'll do it thoughtfully. You know, we're confronted by the loss of media, Trump, or any kind of opposition to an unfair election was dismissed by the courts and states. And when that occurs, we're in a different ballgame.
Yeah.
So I'm going to leave it there. You're smart enough to take the ball. And maybe not today, but another time. And I appreciate your efforts. And, you know, it's sad to see people who are living different realities throughout the nation. And I don't, it's almost like you're in a Twilight Zone episode. And it's very frustrating for a lot of people who can think outside the box. And thank you for your efforts.
You bet. Thank you for your call, John. Much appreciated. You know, if you want, stick around. We can talk about it a little bit. I have some thoughts, and to make sure.
I got to run back to work.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your call,
have a
John.
Good day.
I'll try to speak to that a little bit here momentarily. It's an interesting thing. I think, you know, the psychology of, well, first of all, you know, we've been groomed into this dialectical mindset, and that's kind of the way people behave. So if you're one of those opportunities of crisis people, how fortuitous that you have a society full of people who react based on stimulus and response. You know, the basically people who sort of live in the Skinner box of operant conditioning. You push here, you know they're going to go over here. So for the game theory cybernetic totalists, it's a perfect match made in hell. And most recently, you know, speaking of this, you know, what do we do about these things? I was going to mention, you know, I cited Covey's Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, just a passage. It's interesting how far we've come. You know, if the ACLU is the conservative bastion of freedom now in America, we know how far gone we are. Same thing with Covey's Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. No particular disparagement on him meant. I value his research, obviously, but it's just interesting. So he talks about this idea of empathic listening in Habit 5, Seek First to Understand, Then to Be Understood. Page 241 of my copy, empathic listening, most people say empathetic. Empathic listening is so powerful because it gives you accurate data to work with. No one even understands what listening is, let alone empathic listening these days, generally speaking. Instead of projecting your own autobiography and assuming thoughts, you know, and there's all kinds of projection going on. Just listen to Schumer, Pelosi, etc. Cuomo, he knows. Cuomo is a generational Satanist, I would say. You know, his dad was a theosophist, generally speaking, and I'm pretty sure the apple didn't fall far from the tree. And, you know, so while you're doing those kinds of things, I mean, is there hope for Andrew Cuomo? Sure. He has to renounce the power that the devil has, with which the devil has imbued him, and then there's hope. But so Covey writes, instead of projecting your own autobiography and assuming thoughts, feelings, motives, and interpretation, you're dealing, if you're exercising empathic listening, you're dealing with the reality inside another person's head and heart. You're listening to understand. You're focused on receiving the deep communication of another human soul. In addition, empathic listening is the key to making deposits in emotional bank accounts, because nothing you do is a deposit unless the other person perceives it as such. You can work your fingers to the bone to make a deposit, only to have it turn into a withdrawal when a person regards your efforts as manipulative, self-serving, intimidating, or condescending because you don't understand what really matters to him. Empathic listening is in and of itself a tremendous deposit in the emotional bank account. It's deeply therapeutic and healing because it gives a person psychological air, quote unquote. Now, the opposite obviously is gaslighting. And what does that do? So continuing, if all the air were suddenly sucked out of the room, and this speaks to the issue of gaslighting and kind of the society we're living in, exactly, you know, what John in New York said in this context here just a moment ago. So Covey writes, if all the air were suddenly sucked out of a room you're in right now, what would happen to your interest in this book? You wouldn't care about the book. You wouldn't care about anything except getting air. Survival would be your only motivation. But now that you have air, it doesn't motivate you. This is one of the greatest insights in the field of human motivation. So again, if you're a cybernetic totalist, game theory, you know, trying to inculcate people into this dialectical mindset and control them, you know, you push, they respond, you pull, they respond. In opportunities of crisis fashion, how do you leverage this, you know, mechanism to motivate people, so to speak? Anyway, continuing, survival would be your only motivation, but now that you have air, it doesn't motivate you. This is one of the greatest insights in the field of human motivation. Satisfied needs do not motivate. It's only the unsatisfied need that motivates. Next, but here is the key in regard to what's going on right now, and, you know, in that context that John mentioned. Next, it's only the unsatisfied needs that motivate. Next to physical survival, the greatest need of a human being is what? Psychological survival, to be understood, to be affirmed, to be validated, to be appreciated. When you listen with empathy to another person, you give that person psychological air. And after that vital need is met, you can then focus on influencing or problem solving. This need for psychological air impacts communication in every area of life. Now, if the opposite is happening, then what? Just like the analogy he gave, the air is sucked out of the room, which is what the totalitarian gaslighting is doing. You know, Hayek, chapter 11, Road to Serfdom, the end of truth, totalitarian propaganda is all encompassing in its scope. What does that do? It's like, you know, going into Maslow's basement, basically, in the hierarchy of needs. Suddenly you can't concentrate on the, you know, the otherwise ordinary functions of life. And so the point is, this is a psychological force that presses on people in America, or in situations like this anywhere, in any time. It's pressing on people in America, and it's causing, well, we're a largely histrionic society anyway. And so it's causing these, I think, violent outbursts and stuff, not the stuff that gets televised necessarily or publicized widely, but, you know, we can see these things. I mean, we can feel the pressure just like among family and friends and things like that. You know, if you disagree even slightly now, you know, we can't have a conversation because there might be some violent outburst. Everyone's frustrated. Everyone's trying to survive psychologically. And so that's a real thing. But, you know, I think my answer to John's question my best advice, you know, for the Christian, it's, you know, as the Spirit leads, the Holy Spirit will lead everybody. I don't think there's a broad brush approach. If you're, you know, outside of that covering, then I don't know. I don't have a good answer. And again, we've been conditioned to believe that there's some, you know, some voice on high. It's the nanny state in this case that will save us, even though the nanny state is the one that keeps engineering, or is the front at least that keeps perpetrating these problems. So for the Christian, it's a different answer. Maybe, you know, for different people, depending on how the Spirit leads. You know, John in Tennessee, when he calls in from time to time, he reminds us of the passage in Hebrews 12, verse 4 in particular. You have not yet resisted to the point of shedding blood, and you're striving against sin. And you have forgotten the exhortation which is addressed to you as sons. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, for nor faint when you are reproved by him. For those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines, and he scourges every son whom he receives. And so, verse 7, it is for your discipline that you endure. God deals with you as with sons, for what son is there whom his father does not discipline? And there's more, but you know, we have, again, we've been sort of acculturated to believe that Woodrow Wilson's new freedom, the freedom from want, is a reality, and it's not. It's an artificial construct, not reality. And that has been used, kind of like the analogy from, you know, Brian and Jenna, the wild and free hogs of the Okefenokee Swamp. You hogs can have freedom from want. We'll give you free food all the time, and the fence goes up. You know, we've erected our own panopticon around ourselves and each other. And now what? If there's manufactured freedom from want, then maybe there can be manufactured scarcity, like I was talking about with the Club of Rome's first global revolution. So it's a different thing. The other side of that, I think, would be to say, you know, again, and this is sort of Christian-oriented, biblically-oriented, the shrewd manager. You know, the analogy of the shrewd manager is interesting that Jesus gives. There are interesting examples. In other words, God's people, while, you know, the admonition is to be wise as serpents, gentle as doves. I like gentle because harmless implies that you can cause no harm, so to speak. You're not capable of it, but gentle implies personal restraint. You know, there's Ephesians 6, obviously, 2 Corinthians 10, what is it, 3 through 5, I want to say, is that the passage? Those kinds of things, tearing down strongholds. There is the capability of, you know, calling thunder down from heaven. Speaking of which, Elijah, 1 Kings 17, you know, there's an example. The point is, the shrewd person, you know, what does that look like? That's an interesting thing. Again, it's the Holy Spirit. And what I mean is, you know, you have, like the example of Elijah. You know, Elijah's sort of taunting these prophets of Baal, you know, saying, maybe he's asleep. Why don't you shout louder? And that's interesting. You know, you might say that's unkind. But, you know, I don't know. It's just something to think about. And that sort of gets back to, you know, John saying Joseph was kind of like, you know, the Henry Kissinger of his day. Speaking of NSSM 200 and, you know, Malthusian eugenicist, manufacturing scarcity and these kinds of things, or you know, a sort of an opportunism, very shrewd opportunism. you know, it gets back to the, you know, the Machiavellian, you know, lie hop, high hop, my hop, let it happen, help it happen, make it happen on purpose. You know, if you let it happen or you help it happen, you just give it a nudge, then you can say, well, I didn't do it. I didn't cause it. And by the way, they chose freely. Yeah, but you suggested to them that they do it this way. Yeah, but I didn't make them do it. Very devious. Anyway, to the analogy of Joseph, you know, as the Henry Kissinger, he's a shrewd guy, but in the end, in Genesis chapter 50, he says, as for you, you know, Joseph said to his brothers, because they were worried, and he said, do not be afraid, for I am in God. Am I in God's place? Am I, you know, he's the one who judges. So he said, as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good. In order for what? To bring about this present result, to preserve many people alive. And so it's for us all to choose, you know, should you be shrewd? Should you be feckless and, you know, helpless? Definitely not, you know, especially when you go through the New Testament and you read about this Holy Spirit dunamis, this, you know, incredible power from the, you know, same root we get the word dynamite. So no, you're not supposed to be feckless, but, you know, ruthless, cunning, I don't know. Everyone has to decide for themselves, and I don't think every person and every situation is equal there. So it's, in my opinion, as the Spirit leads. But generally speaking, I think there's a reason why in the Beatitudes Jesus said, you've heard it said, love your neighbor, hate your enemy. Today I give you a new command, love your enemy. And pray for those who spitefully use you. You know the story. If you you know, if he asks for your, you know, if he asks for your coat, basically give him the shirt off your back. If he asks you to go a mile, go two, those kinds of things. And an example, you know, I mentioned recently in Congress, who was it? It wasn't Scalise. Was it? I don't think it was. Anyway, whoever it was that said Capitol Police deserve our applause, and they clapped. Basically, if you are assuming the best in people, that sort of reminds me of Romans 5:8. You know, it's not the judgment, it's not the rebuke. And this is something that I've been working on in this broadcast. It's, you know, interesting to hear John, you know, the perception of the mood changes that are subtle. It's interesting. Although Breitbart's, you know, hating Breitbart intro isn't terribly subtle, but, you know, the armor of Ephesians 6 is, you know, the offensive weapon is the sword and prayer, and the rest is defensive, so that you can stand, remain steadfast and resolute. So, you know, we have been encouraged to lose sight of these things. And so for the Christian, the idea is that, you know, the God of the Bible and the creator of the universe, it's all within his purview, so to speak. And no one is more powerful than that. No one is more powerful than the Holy Spirit. He is still the one who is omniscient, omnipresent, omnipotent, all of those things. And we are encouraged to forget about that. Neil Postman talked about that. Michael Crichton talked about that. A lot of other folks, you know, I've mentioned how Jaron Lanier cites Alan Turing, who said basically the same thing, you know, with regard to the Turing test. So that's interesting. Anyway, hopefully that's enough said on that. I think it's incumbent upon all of us to, you know, be thoughtful in our response to these things. But generally speaking, you know, like Romans 5:8 says, God demonstrates his love in this, that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. And that is the appeal to our fellow man. You know, is it possible to reach in and appeal to our fellow man I believe so. Even to the most hardened hearts, which we know is going to happen in the end times, so to speak. You know, Jesus talks about it in Matthew 24, for example. But that's probably what we should be doing, appealing to one another in that fashion. So anyway, hopefully that's at least enough of an answer for now. We got to get back to the phones. And I don't know, maybe we'll come back to that later. But those are my thoughts on John's very thoughtful questions. Back to the phones. David in Ohio, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, David.
I wanted to, and I know you know this because you speak so well extemporaneously about what people from the past have said, but I came upon a quote from John Adams not too long ago where he, you know, this is back when he was alive. He said that a republic is only for a moral and religious people. It's good for no other. And yeah. That's where we're at today. The elites know, knew that to conquer a people or a nation, they had to condition people to be go from a moral people to an immoral people. And
no
that's
question.
Where we're at today.
Yep.
And I, you know, I just thought
the 6-point plan of the Illuminati. It's not real. Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah, Nesta Webster wrote about it in World Revolution. Yep, and it's just to do that, to basically debauch and demoralize the people. Yep. Virtue, morality, and religion, as Patrick Henry said.
And I wanted to give a kind of a final grade on Trump's presidency. On the foreign policy, I would give him a C+. He did not start any new wars, but where I ding him quite a bit is he didn't end the wars that were ongoing. He didn't need to start any new wars.
Right.
He should have brought all our troops home, and he did not do that. To me, that was a great disappointment. And on the domestic economy front, I give him a big fat F, though I think he facilitated the uptick in our economy. The fact that he when this manufactured COVID situation came about, instead of squashing it like a bug, he fanned the flames. He should have stood there right there and said, this is nonsense. This is bogus. And, you know, when he noticed that Fauci was going to start getting his hands on the steering wheel, he should have grabbed the steering wheel away from Fauci, and he should have put Fauci in his place. And he didn't do that. And in fact, he made it worse by declaring a national emergency on March 13th of last year. And that's where all the state lockdowns, where the draconian measures took place, is through the fact that he declared a national emergency last March. He gave credence to a false reality, you know, and that's why all these people now are pretending, you know what I mean? We're just pretending.
Yeah.
So I give him a big fat F. I mean, the damage that has been done immeasurably to people in this country and the world, you know, you just can't measure it. And it's created a lot of grief, sadness for people. And one more quick thing, if I can, Chris. I
We're
hear
out
a lot
of time.
About. Okay.
Yeah, go ahead real quick.
Okay, real quick, you know, I hear a lot of people say that the devil is powerful. The devil isn't powerful. The only power he's got is the power of beguile. And people need to realize they're much more powerful than they think, and the devil is not as powerful as they think. So I just wanted to let you guys know that.
Appreciate that. Thank you, David. Anthony, sorry we missed you. That'll do it. Take care. God bless. Catch you on the other side.
30 days and pay all closing costs. Our service is ideal for property owners who are in pre-foreclosure, have high-end repair costs, experiencing financial hardship, going through costly divorces, are relocating, need cash for retirement, suffering family loss, or have tax liens. Whatever your situation may be, we can help you sell your property and get the money you need. If you own a single-family home or multiple family units, call us for a free consultation at 888-910-1037. That's 888-910-1037. or visit our website at cashingproperty.com. That's cashingproperty.com. Sell your property fast and leave all your worries behind.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.